call the Resource Committee meeting to order. Day is April 22nd, it's 8:30. In attendance today, we have Representative Herman, Representative Cato, Representative Pierce, Representative Thompson, and myself, Representative Schultz. Also Representative Sun. First bill we're going to bring up today is a committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 14. A resolution relating to the navigability of Alaska's rivers and lakes. And I believe that the resolution is pretty self-explanatory. It just asks that we request the President of the United States and Congress to direct the Secretary of Interior to suspend further classification of Alaskan water bodies as wild and scenic rivers until such time as the final decision is reached on the issue of navigability, thus allowing historical and traditional activities to continue on Alaskan water bodies in dispute or in litigation. What has happened throughout the state, as you know, the federal government has come in and classified rivers as wild and scenic, and it has had it's really had a tremendous impact on the use of those rivers by Alaskans. I don't have any testimony to offer, so I don't have to turn the chair over.
Yeah, just a question on the issue of navigability. Is the navigable aspects of the waterways when they get declared wild and scenic substantially changed? I guess I'm not really up to speed on that.
I'm going to have Frank Mielke come up to address some of the questions here.
Frank Mielke, staff representative Cotton, formerly chief of land management. Could you repeat your question again?
Well, navigable waters is always been under the jurisdiction of the feds, and my question is, are they changing the navigability standards or aspects when they declare a river wild and scenic?
Well, they do, because without that determination, there's the possibility that the federal government will assert its jurisdiction, and that, in fact, is what happened. The related bill of Representative Cotton's HB 316, Representative Gruenberg raised the point that there's some federal jurisdiction mm-hmm. possibly involved here. The standard that he cited was, could it float a log? Well, anybody that's seen the Matanuska River knows that it can float many logs, but the federal government contested the navigability determination of that. And the Bureau of Land Management, both with respect to the Matanuska and the Gulkana River, fought the state very hard in the state's assertion of navigability. So if there's without that determination, the title is in question, and that's particularly critical under ANILCA, because ANILCA specifically says no state land is included in these navigable or wild and scenic rivers. So the navigability determination really should be made first, and with the record that BLM has in asserting or trying to deny the navigability, it's very important that determination be made first. So there is a connection there because of the title to the land.
On the other hand, if I can, Mr. Chairman, it's my experience that you go to try to fill in any type of wetland or waterway, and the Corps of Engineers will assert navigability anywhere they can.
Yeah, that's a different kind of navigability. There's actually three standards of navigability, and the broadest one is the state standard. The state standard is even broader than the federal standard. Then you have the federal standard for title purposes. Then you have the federal standard for the Clean Water Act, and that's where the Corps of Engineers comes in. Their jurisdiction comes in. The Clean Water Act, even though it's not navigable, if it feeds into a navigable stream, which all water does at some point in time go into, that's the broad hand of the federal government under the Clean Water Act. So that's really not a title question at all.
In attendance, we have also Representative Wallace and Representative Jenkins. Representative Sun, go ahead.
No, I appreciate the explanation of navigability, and in terms of the title determinations, how does this relate to the Lands Act navigability questions that Native corporations under lands are, we're in a navigability argument there over whose land is what?
Yeah, that's,
and how it counts.
That's a related issue, and if I can explain how that happens, there's a statute of limitations in ANILCA, the D2 law, that says that the state is limited. There's a statute of limitations on filing navigability determinations, and that's one of the reasons that looking over the DNR budget, there was a question about the navigability budget and being able to file all those to get the issues on the table. There's been some very adverse ruling to the states out of, well, originally coming out of North Dakota, where the state of North Dakota never had any notice whatsoever that the federal government had ever asserted its jurisdiction, and went all the way up the district court. The Court of Appeals agreed with the state, and the Supreme Court said, well, there's a 12-year statute of limitations. So, and it's questionable as to when, the court never said when that started running, but they said whenever it started running, it passed a long time ago. So, not one of the better decisions from any court, probably a typical Berger decision court. You know what the decision is, but you don't know what the law is after reading it. So, along with that, several states have pushed for amendment to that 12-year statute of limitations in the Federal Quiet Title Act. So, that's related as well, and we've got a, in addition to that problem that's been created as to when the statute of limitations actually starts running, we have the shorter statute of limitations. It's either 5 or 7 years under ANILCA. So it's critical to get some recognition for the issue and getting the feds to slow down what they're doing while we can get them to make a determination that we can't appeal, because the courts haven't treated the states too well. They're not picking on Alaska. They even picked on North Dakota.
If I could, then this resolution is basically the same thrust as the funding we had in the DNR budget.
Yes.
Is to issue to get navigability decided on,
yes,
all of our rivers before,
yes,
we classify,
yeah,
them.
There's one decision, if I could go on a little bit, dealing with, I believe it was the Karluk River in Kodiak, where lands had been conveyed, and it was BLM basically said, well, we've already conveyed them, we don't have to make a determination. Then they made a non-navigability determination of the mouth of the Karluk River, which pretty hard to make, and then they said, well, we're not going to reverse it because we've already passed title. So, and that's a prime fishing stream for a lot of people, and there's been some real problems created there, and this resolution would ask them to, would also be in that same vein, to get them to make some determinations before they took any action that might foreclose the state's options.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any additional questions?
We don't want to attempt to define navigable river in this resolution anywhere.
I don't believe so.
Mr. Chairman, that would not be changed. That would go under the, basically it's the common law as codified by the 1953 Submerged Lands Act. It really doesn't give much of a definition either. It's basically the common law definition of being susceptible or usable to commerce, which raises some particularly interesting questions up here about bodies of water that probably aren't that big, but in their frozen state do carry a lot of traffic. So that's another question that's very important up here that is rather unique to Alaska. A lot of these streams that you could never float anything on are just perfect for snow machines, dog sleds, and just walking on. So that's it's a bigger issue than it appears when. And I think the tendency has been, when it's just Alaska on these federal issues, we lose. If it's somebody else involved in it, we do a little bit better.
Mr. Chairman, I notice in the whereases we have trade, travel, commerce, subsistence, recreational activities, that in the resolve clause we only talk about historical and traditional uses. I was wondering if it might pay to put the word commerce in there someplace.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about after traditional.
I haven't really figured it out yet, but I guess I asked Frank, do you think it makes any difference?
Well, I think it might make a difference. The one case that the corporation, Native Corporation, and the state were on the same side was the Kandik and Nation River cases, and that kind of traditional use was, you had both the corporation and the state on the same side. Corporation didn't want to get charged for the acreage, is where what their situation was, and the state didn't want to lose the acreage. And that was one of the issues there, that traditional navigation, traditional whatever they were doing, trapping or whatever along there, and using that stream for access, it before an administrative law judge, it was favorable to the state and to the corporation. So that was a grounds that was used in determining that case.
I guess
Representative Cato.
Representative Schultz, Mr. Chairman. The Committee for Transportation had this under consideration. We made a minor change in one of the whereases on line 15. And I have no objection to Representative Sutton's putting the word commerce in. We felt that it came out as a good resolution and that we voted it out of committee with several due passes, hoping that it would go through the Resources Committee.
Jenny Herman.
Yeah, Frank, I know, you know, historically they've talked about well, the Kandik Rivers, and I know there's a lot of controversy way back when, but they're trying to determine these wild and scenic rivers now, and maybe do you have a list of them, or could you tell us?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a list of them now. There were certain ones named in Anilka, and then it said there are other rivers that they're doing studies on, and there a lot of them are rivers, a lot of them are creeks. There's very many of them that either have been going on since 1981 or that are studies over these things that are going on now. Whether there's 40 of them or 30 of them, that's about the range of rivers we're talking about. And they do cover pretty much the whole state. They don't cover many of the populated areas. That's just my recollection of any of the listings. And in my capacity at Department of Natural Resources, the reviews that I got, they seem to be fairly remote in the more rural areas of Alaska. But I don't have a listing of them.
I guess it may not fit in this resolution. My concern is whenever we talk about historical and traditional, it's always you got to prove in the past that it was a viable activity then to do something. And I'm just saying, is there any way we can start talking about maybe the future use of some river for trade or commerce that may go in here? And that may not be the point of this resolution, is just to put a hold of designations on until we figure out navigability. But
Mr. Chairman,
that's a primary for us to the legislation. Go ahead.
Basically, the standard is susceptibility for use in commerce, not that it actually had to be used, but that's the best way you prove that it was susceptible, to show that it was actually used. But that is the common law standard, not that it ever actually had to be, but it had to be susceptible to that use. So that is, I don't know if you really need that in the bill, because that's clearly part of the common law.
Additional questions?
No, I just point out on page 2, line 15, the last word, honorable, you're missing the E on the end of it.
Maybe.
On what?
Line 15, the last word is missing an E.
Mr. Chairman, would you like this bill moved out of committee? I move that we pass out CS for House Joint Resolution Number 14, Transportation, out of committee. I met with individual recommendations.
Has DNR testified on?
Does anyone here from DNR
have to sign that?
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Vedina from Division of Land and Water Management in DNR. We looked at this bill in the, or this resolution in the Transportation Committee, offered a few suggested wording changes at that time to the chairman, and those were incorporated, and the department feels that it's a, certainly an important important issue and one that we support.
In the letter here, they mentioned that there's 12 rivers that will be addressed by this resolution, and that three have already been designated as navigable. And I wondered, what are those other, what are these rivers?
Mr. Chairman, I could look. That information comes from the federal code that was it's the codification of a NILCA. And I apologize, I couldn't tell you what page this comes from. I think it's page 1062 of the Code of Federal Regulations, but paragraphs at the top of the page, paragraphs 77 through 88 list the 12 or 13 rivers which are under study under the section in ANILCA. They include the Colville. Some of these I'm not going to be able to pronounce. Etivluk, Utakok, Canuktok, Kizilalik, Mezalitna, Shinjek, Setuk, Porcupine, the Yukon, the Rampart section of the Yukon, the Squirrel, and the Koyuk. Those rivers were identified for study. A whole slew of other rivers were designated by the measure as well and seen.
Shinjik and the Porcupine and the Yukon are in District 24, and what will this do for them?
At least one or two of those, I think, administratively are designated navigable now. So that determination is made. Title to the bed of those water bodies is already determined. And that's principally what our concern is. What the resulting studies will show is going to be finally determined by the federal government. I do not know if all three of those are currently designated and considered navigable. Perhaps, right? I'm certain that the Yukon, at least,
Could you simply explain to me the connection between state navigability and federal wild and scenic rivers?
Mr. Chairman, I'll try. The navigability question, certainly from the state's perspective, deals with the tidal question. Those lands, those water bodies that are navigable, the beds of which would be state land if they are navigable. The wild and scenic river designation is a, to my understanding, a determination that a water body has certain outstandingly remarkable features. Generally from a visual standpoint, and I am not an expert at all. Some of this is my interpretation of what it's attempting to do, but those water bodies would be set aside for those intrinsic values, typically some feature, geologic feature, perhaps some environmental feature that the federal government is studying. I don't know if I answered your question very well, but I should say that I don't think I have any better answer. I follow that.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I perhaps said this a little too quickly, but the navigability determination would then say the bed is owned by the state. Under NILCA, then, state lands can't be included, so the federal management would only go to any federal uplands that would be bordering the river.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, on a larger question, we have an idea at this point how much navigable river lands, or how much navigable lands the state has indeed acquired.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if I have a good answer to that. I think in a category of undetermined, maybe 4 or 5 million acres, that's just a ballpark guess, of lands that could be determined navigable and therefore be state land. How much of that is now, I do not know.
Thank you.
Are there objections still maintained?
No, I just found that.
Okay, there is a motion before us to move committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 14, Transportation, from committee. Hearing no more objections, it is moved from the committee. The next bill is House Bill 42, relating to the disposal of state land within a community. And for discussion purposes, I would like to have us adopt the committee substitute before us here.
I so move.
Are there any objections to adopting committee substitute for House Bill 42, resources? Hearing none, the committee substitute is before us. I got Mike, I'll have you come up and testify again on this legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Bediener, again, from Land and Water Management at DNR. In the previous committee, Community and Regional Affairs, the department testified on this measure and identified in a letter to the committee a number of concerns that we had with it. I don't know if you have a copy of the letter from the department there, but it outlined a variety of concerns. I think that probably break down into two categories. One, we did not have a good understanding of what a community would be defined as, and we felt that would be possibly such a broad interpretation that we may not be able to do much of anything given the definition as it had been done. The second concern was the disposal identified in the original bill had, again, no definition in statute, and our regulatory definition for disposal includes any partial interest that we may develop, a lease, in certain instances, permits, rights of ways, material sales, timber sales, a whole variety of actions that the department does in addition to residential land sales. We, in the letter, stated a number of concerns, and then we have had a brief opportunity to look at the draft that is before the committee now, and some of our concerns will continue to be the same. The draft has now offered a definition for community by designating a 5-mile radius around the central point where group of folks are living, and that, you know, helps to define the community, but there are a number of other questions inherent in the community, being that there is no inherent power or recognized local body. We would still be concerned as to when we had properly notified the community, when we had I should say, in terms of this bill, when the community was speaking to the department as to what would constitute an approved disposal. There's a bigger question involved there that we're concerned with, and that would be having the local community have virtual complete say over what actions the department may make. And the department, of course, is looking from a statewide perspective, which incorporates the local perspective, and in a sense, having the community make that decision for us may be giving too much authority at a local level, who is not necessarily empowered to determine what the state's best interest may be in many of these instances.
Well, if I may expound just a little bit, the reason for the legislation is primarily that, is because going in and you're disposing of land within a 5-mile radius of these communities is having a detrimental economic impact. It's putting demands on these communities that they're unable to fulfill, such as putting power in, putting roads in. There's just nothing put in the budget to allow for these things. The communities that are impacted by these land disposals, which we have, I believe there's 20-some-odd disposals coming up this summer, and I can't remember how many thousand acres are going to be disposed of in the interior of Alaska as a result of it, and the majority of which is going to take place in my district again. As a result of that, there is nothing there for power. There is nothing there for roads. And this would allow a community that's impacted by a land disposal within a 5-mile radius, and the people that will determine where the geographical center of that community is at are the same people that receive the revenue sharing money from the state. And that, if they're legally entitled to receive revenue sharing money, which most of the communities are already identified by Community and Regional Affairs, that is the entity that you would contact. They would make the determination of the geographical center. Then, and so we're just saying the land disposals, that in those areas where these people are going to be impacted economically. One of the things, if I may just continue on, one of the things that has never been checked in my district, Otna, Tanana Chiefs, all these people, they're the largest landholders in the area, other than the state, because we got a lot of state land there. But these corporations are willing to dispose of land and sell it at fair market value. And some of the best land in the district is owned by these corporations. Some of it is within the boundaries of these communities, much of it. For the state to come in and put an economic burden on the community that is going to be impacted, or a development problem down the road, why not allow the largest private landholder in the area the ability to sell land? We had this happen down in Northway just recently, where they sold land along the Shoshana River, and they put the lots up for sale, and I believe the lots were about $13,000 a piece. Well, now DNR would come in there and dispose of that. They would sell those same lots, would have sold for maybe $1,000 or $1,500 a lot. These people were selling them for, and the village council sold the land, and it turned out as such that there were a few people from, other parts of the state that came in and bought land. However, most of that land was purchased locally by the people at a very, very high price. And now DNR is going down the road approximately 15 miles where no one lives, and is thinking about or contemplating at this point in time a land disposal in the Gardner Creek area. Well, there's nothing there. There's absolutely nothing there. So if they go in and dispose of 50 or 60 parcels of land, it's going to have an economic impact on that community of Northlake.
I have an overview, and then I'm not sure I follow the thrust of which direction you're going here, but the overview is, I find it kind of amazing that in a matter of 6 or 7 years, we sat here with this huge cry and outcry to get land to the people, and we passed legislation overriding every borough zoning laws and everything to get land out, and now we got legislation in here saying don't sell land and keep it in. But I guess I'd want to get into whether these communities have planning and zoning powers now in terms of land planning. My kind of thrust is going is that I think, within the next 10 years, we've got to start looking at getting most of the mandatory borough act in the state enacted and get people into boroughs and into local government so they have local planning powers. But instead of doing it piecemeal, which this is, one specific problem, right? It's land disposal. And it's an effort to get community control over disposing of land, not only in the community, but within 5 miles of the community, which is well beyond the boundaries of the city limits of the community or anything else. in terms of affecting state land, and that would be my one of my major objections. And secondly, I'd like to follow on your last comment. You're trying to, I guess you're trying to say that if the state goes out and disposes of land to the people and gives the people a good deal, and it may drive down the property prices or property values of somebody else's land? Is that what you're saying there?
Let me put it this way. If you want land, do you want land in Tok? Would you like to buy some? You can buy it over the counter today. And we've got another land disposal. So far, we've had 7,000 acres disposed of in District 17 in subdivisions, 8,575 in remote sites, 1,548 in homesteads, and 96,526 acres disposed of in agriculture. In disposal. I'm saying acre per acre. For every acre you dispose of down here in Southeastern, we dispose of about 1,000 in the interior. And the problems that it's creating, roads, power, because these people are coming in there and they're moving in, and we've got 10,000 acres right down in the Besna being disposed of at $2.50 an acre. The people are coming in, they're demanding that we have bus routes. They're demanding that we extend of power distribution lines. They're demanding roads, et cetera.
Well, put them into a borough and put some property taxes on it.
Boroughs are going to come, but if you put it up for a vote for those people right now, they're going to vote the borough down. That putting it into a borough is not going to, you know, that's going to come to pass, but that is not doing anything about the present problem that's being created at this time.
Well, I would say giving them partial zoning powers beyond the edges of their community is going to exacerbate the problem that of getting borough control, right? You're going to give them piecemeal control beyond the power of where they live, and that just further eliminates them.
A 5-mile radius of the community?
Beyond the community. Beyond the community. That's what this says.
No. Within a 5-mile radius of the community.
From 5 miles in length from a central point in the community determined by the community.
So
the boundary of the community is described as. So what if this is beyond the boundary? This is a new boundary for communities.
It's allowing the communities to have the say-so about land disposals that are going to take place within a 5-mile radius of their community.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I've got
not
two state
outside
land disposals inside the city of Ketchikan, one on each end, which was done under the Hippie Homestead Act of Representative Freeman's and who was from Ketchikan, but where there is no water, power, sewer, and there's a big hullabaloo. But now I believe under land disposals, you are required to follow borough zoning laws. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right.
So you're just like any other subdivider.
That's correct.
Right. Okay.
If they're like any other subdivider, why do we make them do anything different here?
In a borough, that's true. But in an unorganized borough, they simply come in and hold a land disposal and then leave the community with the problems.
No, they leave the state with the problems.
Well, if you live there, it's leaving the community with the problems.
Yeah, but the funding to solve the problem comes from the state.
Of course.
Yeah, that's it.
Right. If. Right.
Mr. Chairman.
President,
I'd like to remark a little bit on the funding problem and stuff like that. Even within a homebrew municipality, the state has done land disposals. I can cite several instances, not only within the municipality, but some without, where they are demanding that the municipality put in their roads, water and sewer, bus lines and stuff like that, whereas the land was disposed without any decision from the community whatsoever.
I think that was under the old rules.
Right.
Yeah.
And even under the new rules, they still are not coming in with any roads or anything like that. And I'm getting a great many letters from people who have purchased lands through a land disposal with no access.
Right.
And I find it a little bit hard to swallow that when DNR does put these land disposals out, and I realize they're not going to make the mistake they made before when they put out the maps and named the streets and did all that good stuff, which was a complete fiasco as far as the people purchasing was concerned. I realize they're not going to do that anymore. However, it still places a tremendous burden on the locality, because then they have to attempt to go ahead and see if they can get utilities and things like that. and your unorganized borough. It's all very well to say that, okay, make them a borough, but then they have the authority to say whether or not they're going to become a borough. And if they aren't going to become a borough, then we still have the problem to solve.
If they get every service they need without becoming a borough, why become one?
Well, they don't.
If I may, I'd like to give you just an idea here on the map of what's happened in the past few years. Okay, we're tying up land all the time in southeastern and through central Alaska. We're putting wreck rivers. We've got parks and everything else, and we're adding. We added a bunch of marine parks this year. We're adding more. It takes more and more land away from the people from the state of Alaska for land disposal. Where does it impact? It impacts this area right through here because they don't dispose of land out in here.
They do.
Very seldom.
Well, that's where all the people live.
Okay, but anyway, you're coming into the state of Alaska, okay? You got the border station down here. Now, they got a land disposal being proposed right in here at Gardner Creek. Nobody lives there. There's nothing there. There's not even anything there for recreation, okay? There's no lakes. If they were disposing of land around a lake or something, that would be one thing, but it's just they're just disposing of land to dispose of it. You get down to 40 Mile, up around Chicken. Now they've got some homestead land being proposed up there. Around Tote, that area, we've had the hippie homestead. We've got homestead land. We've got ag land was proposed at one time. Was finally stopped. But lots of land. Tanacross, the Native Association, the Northway and the Tetlin, they own land. They're willing to dispose of land in that area. But what we've done, we've gone down the highway 6 or 8 miles and disposed of 40 or 50 parcels of land. Then we've gone 50 miles down the road between Tok and Delta, and we've disposed of land at Cathedral Bluffs across here, on the other side of the Tanana, on the other side of it. No access except in the wintertime, if you can find the right place to cross the snow machine. We're gonna end up building a bridge across that thing someday, as soon as all those people move in. We're gonna have to. You know, they're gonna scream and yell and everything else. And even if they become a borough and start and tax themselves, how are we ever going to start paying for the access back into some of these areas, back into this Chicken area? You get up in the Delta area. We've come out here, we've disposed of land. We've disposed of land on the Johnson River. You know, we've disposed of land on the Robinson River. You come down here in this Nevesna area, swamp land. They've got 10,000 acre land disposal going on right now, $2.50 an acre. Creating all kinds of problems. Those people, I show you letters in there that got from those people that want bus routes, they want roads built. We can't do it. We don't have the bucks. These land disposals are creating all kinds of problems for the people in the interior of Alaska. All we're asking is that some common sense and logic goes into these land disposals. That's just a few of them. Some common sense and logic. What I've asked before is that when DNR gets ready to dispose of land in an area, that they make the land disposal adjacent to another one. For example, if you come into the Tok area, which I'm very familiar with, and they dispose of land, why not the next land disposal grow out so there's some growth pattern there, not 15 miles down the road, and not 20 miles this way, and 6 miles that way, and 40 miles by float plane over to a lake, and then when they've disposed of land around the lake, George Lake was the last one. They don't even dispose of land on the lake. It's 400 or 500 yards back off of the lake. You know, they're just creating all kinds of problems. And if you're going to dispose of land around George Lake, why not dispose of land around George Lake and dispose of all of it at one time for a recreation area, similar to what they've done at Quartz Lake and Harding Lake?
I understand your frustration, Mr. Chairman. I'm not quite sure how it relates to this piece of legislation, and I guess my major problem with this piece of legislation, other than it's poorly drafted, which is another technical issue, but I guess I'm a little bit concerned of giving planning and zoning powers to communities who don't want to adopt the responsibility of planning and zoning. And I think we're just continuing. You know, I understand the problems with land disposal, and the argument there is that the land disposal, when it goes in, should be a totally integrated plan, which gets into your point of all the services and roads and access, and that ought to go into the plan, otherwise it shouldn't dispose it. But I like to get on the bill here. I just I have a hard time with this definition of community and putting it in Title 38 in particular. But also given the people just piecemeal authority out there so that eventually they do not have to get into the Mandatory Borough Act. And I'm just real concerned about that. In the next 5 to 10 years or 15 years, as our revenues start to decline, the people who are in organized boroughs and communities are going to ask to be pick up more and more and more of the burden of funding services. And I think it's going to be really important that the rest of the state that is not in an organized borough area get into that status. And just to piecemeal those powers out, I guess I'm just basically opposed to that.
Representative Herman.
To Representative Sanja, how do you see that we're giving these areas planning and zoning powers?
Because you're giving them the authority to deny land disposal. You're giving the community the authority to tell DNR we're not going to dispose of the land. That's paragraph A.
Is that planning and zoning powers?
I don't see it, sir.
If the argument that the reason that is given by the chairman that the reason we should give the community veto authority on disposing the land is because they're not going to put roads and powers and sewers and access into the lands, then to me that's one step right in front of planning and zoning. Planning and zoning starts with whether you're going to sell the land or not.
Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand your concerns, and I know what's happening in the interior too, but I'm concerned that with this legislation we're going to create an even larger problem in that immediately upon moving into a disposal area, the people in that disposal area can say, okay, we don't want another disposal within a 5-mile radius of the center of our disposal, and they will keep DNR from being able to do a disposal next to that area. And like you said, you'd rather see DNR do them side by side or contiguous somehow, and I'm afraid that this could throw that out because they wouldn't be able to. And I sat last summer at the hearings, public hearings that DNR held for the Sioux City Area Plan, and I listened to a lot of people, and 29 out of every 30 said, gee, you know, I've got my lot and I don't want anyone else to ever get to have one. And if you allow those people to say whether or not DNR is going to be able to come out and do another disposal, it'll never happen.
Well, what I'm saying within right down here from line 25, from line 25 through 29, it says that a Department of Natural Resources may dispose of state land without the approval of the community if the department provides the roads and services customary in the community. If they're willing to increase the price of the land to such that we can go ahead and put roads in, that we can extend power lines, etc., you know, there's no problem. But these problems are being put upon the community as far as the economic development, and the community is having nothing to say about how their community is going to grow. It's growing in a shotgun effect throughout the state. I mean, there's just no coordination. There's no planning. The communities are just, you know, at the mercy of the state.
What's the Municipal Entitlement Act entitled people to do? In a municipality, you're entitled to get so much state land.
Some of the municipalities.
10%.
Mr. Chairman, could we have the representatives from DNR tell us exactly what their procedure is right now for a disposal of whatever sort?
Yes, please. We can. Did you have a follow-up? Or
yeah, along the same lines, I'd like to hear their response to your no coordination and no planning statement.
Mr. Chairman, Ned Farquhar from the Commissioner's Office has been able to join us now.
Why don't you go ahead and describe it?
Why don't you just take the heat, Ned?
Mr. Chairman, in response to the first question, the process the department is using now for land disposal, we call the LADS process, Land Availability Determination System. That process is a 3-year process within which, in the first year, lands are identified for potential sale and taken to public notice and public hearing to assess the local views throughout the regions within which the lands are going to be disposed of. The process continues for the next engineering firm to make determinations on the suitability of the land for disposal. Is the soil appropriate? What lots could be described to allow for the local conditions on site, sewer and whatnot? And then in the third year, the lands are prepared for sale. Hearings are again held on those lands, and that leads to the disposal in the third year. Really quickly going over it.
Okay. But I'll take you to task on that one. The ag land, homestead land is coming up in the Tok area, 7 mile curve. Okay. I believe it says in the homestead bill that extensive public hearings will be held in the community to be impacted. I would like to know when, where the meetings that were supposed to have taken place in Tok were held. I have yet to find a person from Tok that has attended any meeting held in Tok pertaining to a land disposal in that area on this 7 mile curve proposal.
Mr. Chairman, 7 mile curve is one of the areas identified in the Tanana Basin Plan, as are all the areas for disposal. And there have been 70 some public meetings throughout the Tanana Basin held on that plan over the past 2 years. I think your question is more specifically a hearing held on that specific disposal. I would have to.
If you come to Tok and you hold a meeting, or you go to Delta, you go to Glen Allen, you hold a meeting on the Tanana Basin plan, that's not telling the people that you're holding a hearing on land disposal at 7 mile curve.
The department has been very concerned with identifying the Tanana plan as a planning tool that leads not only to designation of land for a variety of uses, but specifically for land disposals. So that's been something, that has not been anything hidden in the publications we've put out on Tanana at all. It's the usefulness of that plan to define where our disposals are going to be for the next 20 years has been a major part of that planning process, of which I do want to point out Gardner Creek is something that is identified maybe 15 to 20 years from now. It's way at the extreme end of the plan. That plan will be revised certainly before that time comes up.
See, in Southeast Alaska, what they do, if they don't want a land disposal, they have a land disposal, 4 people or 5 people move in there, then they say that this is the most beautiful, pristine, absolutely greatest country that it was, ever. And they come in and ask us to make it into a park. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
okay.
The theory
that's exactly what has happened, and you've taken a look at it. We've got House Bill 44. Right? Anyway, that was before us, and that's exactly you've got 9 or 10 people living in an area that. That now that they've got their land and they've got theirs, they want to make it into a park. We're not opposed to land disposal, but now that since they've moved out there, there's 6 or 8 of them, that now they're living in the, anyone else moves in, and it's going to completely destroy everything that it, Southeast stands for. So
Chairman,
they want to make a park out of it.
I would like to take your argument or comments there and say that's exactly what this bill does. This is what Representative Pierce is pointing out, that as soon as some people get into an area and get what they want, they get veto power in any more land disposal. And I would note that my recommendation to the department in Southeast, because of the exact issues, when they go into an area, instead of piecemealing disposal an area, you dispose the whole area at once so that it's done. It's gone. You take a 5,000 acre parcel, say you've got one coming up on Sumas Island, it's 1,100 acres somewhere down the future. You need to do all 1,100 acres at one shot, and that way it's disposed. And if you don't sell it all the first shot, you can sell it over the counter. But there's none of this, we're going to come and do the other half of the bay in 3 years routine. And it solves it. But I'm saying this bill here exacerbates that type of problem. And you're saying
it absolutely does not.
The first people in get the shot at vetoing any more land disposal.
Representative Sun, when's the last time you were in the interior of Alaska? If every person that owns land in Tok moved to Tok, we would probably be the second largest community in the state.
I can tell you, I don't know about the interior, but I can tell you in Ketchikan that if every piece of land was put into normal residential use, the town could sustain 61,000 people, according to the last study.
Representative Herman.
Yeah, same argument, I guess.
But. With regard to this community business that and Representative Peters' question, would a land disposal, would they be able to incorporate, and would they be, then be able to say that they, you know, that they meet the requirements of this act? Is that, do you understand?
I think so, Mr. Chairman. Under this act, they would automatically, by virtue of living in an area, they would qualify under this act, because I think the definition of community would include any group available to receive revenue sharing under 2989.050, which I've looked at that reference. I'm not sure I follow how the description comes about from that, but. They would be able to apply, I think, through CRA to receive funding as a community.
Representative Herman, go ahead.
And then, you guys no longer have a mandate for putting out land disposals, but what's your, you know, schedule or process? I mean, you know, we're trying to stop some of this, but it seems like it's going to continue if DNR, you know, has their way, right?
Right, we have a list of people that's quite long that are interested in getting land. We send a large number of brochures out to people on a mailing list every year.
Certainly there's a lot of people that are interested in getting land. I'm interested in getting land. You know? The point is, people that own this land, and Representative Sun has mentioned this before, in an unorganized borough, you have three residents that I know, that I'm cognizant of, live right here in Juneau, that own land in Tokë, for example, and have never been there, and have no desire to move there. But they own a piece of the rock in Tokë. Now, that doesn't make a lot of sense for that community that's trying to develop and come up with some development plans, and these things are being forced down their throats. They're going to have to accept it, and they're not having any say at all.
Mr. Chairman, I thought I understood earlier that you have to comply with planning and zoning and disposals. You've got to provide road access and water and sewer and all that stuff to dispose land. How does that apply to disposal in Tokë?
Tokë is not an incorporated municipality.
Why don't you get incorporated?
So they don't have to provide anything. They don't have to provide anything. They don't have to provide access or anything else. Dispose of land on the other side of the Tanana River, no access to it. People are not opposed to land disposals. They're opposed to the method in which we're disposing of land and where the disposals are taking place. The community of Tokë could get behind a land disposal 100%. The people in Delta could do it. The people in Glen Allen could do it. You know. But those communities where those land disposals are going to take place within the boundaries or within a 5-mile radius of that community want to have some say-so as to where those disposals are going to be. And I have been to almost every hearing that has taken place in the interior that I'm cognizant of, not in the Tokë area primarily, on land disposals, and at very few meetings, let me tell you. And every one of those meetings that I've gone to, you don't go in and get public input. What you do is you come in with a map and you put it up on the board and you tell the people that are there, you say, here is your area. We're going to dispose of 50 parcels of land here. We're going to dispose of 65 parcels of land here. We're going to dispose of land over here. What do you think? And the people say, we're not in favor of it. You say, okay, thank you for your input. Go home, draw it up, make your subdivision plats, and that's it.
Mr. Chairman, from your point of frustration, I understand that, but this piece of legislation doesn't resolve that. I think another piece of legislation put in Title 38 regarding how land disposals are done is the resolution. I don't think this is the approach to get at that problem.
I do. It doesn't allow DNR to come in and dispose of land.
Yeah, but many of those land disposals that you pointed out, even if you accept the definition of community, are outside the boundaries of those communities.
Yes. We're talking about, we've got to begin having control in these communities that are growing some plans that we can make for ourselves as far as how this community is going
to
grow.
Chairman, what's the objection to the community getting itself incorporated and getting some planning and zoning powers? What's the basic objection to doing that? No, I just like to know. No, I'd
like
to know.
That's an extremely difficult question to answer. You have to recognize and know the type of people that live there. I have been trying to get a third-class borough into the Glen Allen area at the time that I represented and haven't quit trying since. These people basically are, and see how I can phrase this. frightened of state control. And a great many of them feel that no government is better than a borough type situation, because basically they do not have a tax base, and consequently the minute they get into a borough they're going to be taxed, and
that's their choice.
Mostly, well, that's the reason they're choosing not to go into a borough.
Well, then why do they want the powers of the borough?
I don't see where this gives them the power of the borough. In my view, what it does is allow them some say. It doesn't say that the DNR cannot, with their permission, put in land disposals. It does say that we want to have some say on it, which I think as residents of the state of Alaska, they're entitled to a say.
Representative, I just wanted to make a point. There's a land disposal coming up, and I keep going back to this, but there's several, 20-some-odd, 23 communities in the area that are being impacted by homestead land. Now, because of regulation that was adopted, those land disposals by lottery are going to be held, I don't know, they may be held in Juneau, it may be, Anchorage or Fairbanks or whatever. But the lottery in southeast Alaska, if you want to get a piece of land in the past, you went to the lottery, you had to be present. Okay? So people, from the interior, if they want a piece of land, they had to fly to Petersburg or Wrangell or wherever. Now, in this particular land disposal is coming up, where these thousands of acres are going to be disposed of, it's going to be by lottery, and it may or may not be held in the community that's going to be impacted, and you don't have to be present to get it.
I would just note there's a lottery land disposal at Hollis, which is on Prince of Wales Island over from me, that my wife's grandfather happened to be a fortunate winner. The guy on one side of us is from Kotzebue. The guy next to him is from Fairbanks, and the guy next to him is from Nome. And then on the other side, going down the road, we have two Anchorages and one McGrath. So I'm not quite sure that the rule applies, but since then, I think you've got to be you have to be present to win provision into some of the lottery disposals. But also, in terms of southeast disposals, most of the land down here is all national forest land anyway. So I wish we had more land down here to dispose. We only have 400,000 acres out of 16 million.
I thought you signed a due pass on HB 44, which just virtually took the land away from people that have been wanting land over in Thunder Bay and whatever other bays around here. Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Representative Sun that if there are problems, I know it's a shock. It hurts to say. If there are problems with the land disposal legislation, I think perhaps that really is what we need to look at. And I'm not comfortable at all with this, because I've seen too many people who said, gee, I've got my spot of heaven, and nobody else is going to get their spot if it's anywhere near mine. I'm also a little bit bothered by everyone's implicit assumption, it seems, that no matter what sort of disposal it is, the state is required to provide access to these disposals, because I don't necessarily think that that follows, that A follows, or that B follows A in every case. And I think that providing access to all manner of things, not just to land, but providing access is one of the things that has gotten us into the budgetary problem that we're in, and continued thoughts that we absolutely have to provide access is going to keep us in that, and as the oil revenues decline, we're not going to be able to do it. And I think DNR should look at that, but I just don't think with all these disposals that it is implicit that we're going to have to build bridges, roads, or whatever. And I think that people who want land, their own piece of heaven out in the
boonies.
Yeah. out in the wilderness. Many of them, if they want to live in the wilderness, then great. I think that's wonderful. And if they want to live in a city, then I think that's wonderful. But they have to make a choice. And I don't think that it has to be our responsibility to provide access to all those disposal areas.
We're not talking about the remote parcel disposal that DNR is presently disposing land. We are talking about lands disposed of in and around a community. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about 7 miles down the road or 14 miles down the road or 20 miles down the road. I'm talking about land disposals that take place within a 5 mile radius of a community. If that community, for future development and everything else, got to begin have.
But was that community formed by a previous remote parcel?
Of course not.
Disposal?
Of course not.
Some other sort of disposal?
DNR is creating that problem. And you say that we may not have, these people chose to go back in there and live that lifestyle and they don't want access and they sign those agreements. But I can tell you this, that once they get 8 students or 10 students or whatever back in there, then because of the Molly Hooch decree or the Toplik decree, we're going to be required to go back in there and build a school.
Well, I fully understand that, and I think that to carry that one step farther, in all of the parks that we are designating, the people who want the parks also expect all sorts of improvements in those parks too. So we, you know, it's on all sorts of land designations of different kinds. People are expecting access, and it costs money to provide access.
Most of the community is an answer to Ms. Pierce's question that were these communities formed by land disposals. You can take, for example, the community of Glen Allen, which I used an example before. It's been here since the beginning of time, practically. Back in the territorial days, Glen Allen was there. Mm-hmm. These communities are not communities that have been started by land disposals. They're communities who have grown through a need. At that time, it was transportation need, roadhouses, various things like that. It was actually partially built during the gold rush. And Copper Center, various places like that. These communities that I think that we're speaking of in the interior are not communities who have developed because of a land disposal. In fact, I can't think of a one that we're talking about that was.
No.
What are the bluffs that you were talking about?
Cathedral Bluffs.
It's on
bluffs.
The other side of the Tanana.
Yeah, there's nothing there.
But if people move in, we're suddenly going to have to provide
certainly
bridge
you are.
And so on and so forth.
Certainly, if the people that went into the Cathedral Bluffs and the people that were sitting in wherever, urban Alaska, and going through this thing, Cathedral Bluffs, sounds like a neat place, never been there, put in for it, they get the land. Well, those people that have gone out there, I think there's maybe one or two that have built across there, but they found out that they can't get to it, you know, unless they've got a boat, and then there's the native lands, and they don't have access across. You know, that's another thing that we're fighting in the interior. There's access problems that have not been addressed. The Besna thing is up in the air right now because I understand that Otten is not going to provide access to these hundreds and hundreds of homesteaders that are down there presently. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to note a couple of things. I find that this is the same kind of an argument, and relative to Representative Sons and your concerns about when you have a land disposal, who winds up owning the land. It's the same thing as the fishermen being concerned about boats coming up from Seattle. You can't do anything about that. And I find it somewhat disturbing, I guess, to me that we continue to spend time trying to think of ways to deal with that when it's been proven time and again that you can't do it constitutionally. If you're going to have land disposals, you're going to get people from McGrath and Fairbanks and Anchorage owning that land. If you're going to have fishing, you're going to have boats come up from outside, period. So let's stop spinning our wheels on something that you just simply cannot get around. The second comment that I have is that I find it very interesting that I am asked to sit here and consider a piece of legislation that forces me to make a choice between my belief that government that's closest to the ground is best, or land disposals, which I favor. And there's got to be a better way to do it than what this approach calls for. I, too, have problems with this for any number of reasons.
Representative Thompson, you tell me how. You tell me how we can go about having a land disposal in this area through a lottery system where the lottery will be held in the community. For example, it's just this one coming up. This is 7 miles outside of Tok, a 7-mile curve. Okay.
You can't.
And you can't stop it.
You can't have a disposal that is restricted to a given area.
Can you have any local input at all?
So stop spending your time trying to find a way to do it. You can't do it.
We'll do it before I leave the legislature.
Representative, have you guys looked at the issue about the DNR's land disposals in competition with private corporations or private landlords?
Madam Chair, every year we do a land demand assessment, and we try to make sure that there's a demand for the land that we're selling. But I don't think we have to notice any disposal of land to the local EXA corporations. So very early in the process, so that we have pretty much communication with the local corporations. We also get into situations where if we don't have access to a disposal area, we have to buy the right of way to get to it or make a land exchange or something like that. So we work pretty closely with a lot of the other local landowners.
Yeah, I have a question and a follow-up. In working with these private corporations, do they bring up the fact or do they say that you are in competition, that they feel that you're in competition with them?
I haven't heard of that being a very big issue.
Mr. I guess I would just like to ask, I know in the discussions we had in the Loans Committee on the Red Dog Cominco issue, that Nana Corporation announced it was their corporate policy never to sell one square inch of their land. And I mean, they'll lease it or they'll let somebody else use it, but selling their land was taboo. And I just wondered if apparently this is not a uniform decision amongst all of the native corporations.
The reason that the native corporations in my district are interested in selling the land is because the state is going to continually keep coming in and disposing of land, because the land in the interior, that's where the state owns most of the state land. So they're going to simply dispose of it in that area. Okay, population figures dictate that the people are not going to have it, even if they don't want it, or if they would like to have it a little bit closer to their community rather than so far away from the community, they're not going to have any input in it. DNR is going to decide when it's going to take place, where it's going to take place, how many acres are going to be disposed of, and the people in these communities just don't have the numbers to be able to fight the whole land disposal situation. People have resigned themselves to the fact that the land disposals are going to continue to take place. They're asking that they have more input into the land disposals. That's all they're asking for. And they're especially asking for that land disposals that are going to take place within a radius of a community, that they have even more input into that for their own salvation in the future, 15 or 20 years from now, when they become a borough. Because once they become a borough, once they are taxed, then they are going to inherit all of the problems of these past land disposals. And how are they going to handle it? They can't handle it.
Chairman, I understand that, and I can take this exact same bill and put a few different words, land disposal to land use, into it. And I can give you the situation of the village of Heidelberg, which is on the southern end of South Prince of Wales Island on the outside, when it got into coastal zone management and declaring of AMPSAs and writing their coastal zone plan. The law says they can write it for their incorporated village districts, but they wrote one that took the whole south end of Prince of Wales Island and, you know, thousands, hundreds of square miles, which were well beyond their legal jurisdiction. And basically, what they were doing is attempting to exert land and use control land planning control without having to go through the borough process. And I can go through the statutes and find you example of these land use planning controls that are going in. And I guess I went back and read the Mandatory Borough Act over the weekend, so I guess I'm a little bit hot on that one right now. But we passed that in 1964, and we haven't gotten very far with it in 20 years. So that's kind of where I come from. This is one small part of a major problem.
Representative Jenkins.
Mr. Chairman, for fear of being not understood, which I guess my speeches are, I'll start this very clearly. Attempt to. So that you will definitely not know where I'm coming from. I think portions of this discussion, and it's true, I know portions of this discussion have occurred around this table from the day we first arrived here. And whether it's house... Yeah, and they will again. And after Saturday, much to my chagrin, on House Bill 93, I didn't get close to what I needed then either. And the discussion indeed was land disposal. And there is a question on the public hearing, and maybe the representative from DNR, although I'm not going to allow him to speak because I'm not going to ask you a question that I don't know the answer of. Thus, we'll go on from there. But the fact is that land disposals was a portion of that. The question of land disposals and the question of mineral rights, etc., were in the questions of House Bill 93, which is recreational rivers, for lack of other titles. And we won't read it again. But to make a long story short on this, you got to guess on what I'm talking about, too. You can't be any different than anybody else. What I'm saying is that public hearings have a tendency to give different signals to different people. And I suspect from my constituency in Spinard or Anchorage or however, on Roosevelt Street, however you define it, the fact is that the concept of land and land disposal is important to people out there, regardless of whether they're close to the issue physically or geographically far from the issue. Not only land disposal, but any other use of land. And what we have here very clearly in my view is what I said all along. We have a land base of approximately 104 plus a few million acres that are state lands. And we must use those, in my view, very judiciously. And the problem, the reason, as Dick is pointing out, that he's got land disposal problems in his area, is that we can't dispose of land in other areas of the state, or we're having more difficult problem to do so. As John is pointing out, the answer to that is the Mandatory Borough Act. And maybe there should be some supporters to the co-sponsor, to a bill or a resolution that I co-sponsored with the Libertarian, which suggested that we as the borough assembly, which we are, to the non-incorporated areas of this state, the legislature is the borough assembly, and consequently we should take that prerogative. I think that this legislation has some merit, but I think it should also include every other piece of legislation we're going to look at. And I have a very, very, and I'm talking about any kind of lands legislation. I've seen the process of how the Tanana Valley and the Susitna Valley plans are utilized to enact legislation. I don't appreciate that process. I don't think that we as a legislature have been given a fair shake in that process. To try to clear this up, this bill doesn't do what it needs to do, Mr. Chairman. It needs to be broader in my view, and it needs to include the sense of community not only on a local level, but my constituency in Anchorage also. If that was unclear, it's totally meant to be that way. Thank you for the opportunity.
But municipalities are already covered when it comes to land disposals.
Mr. Chairman, this is on a total different note. I know we're running out of time, but right. I would like to bring up the issue of the fact we have 21 days left in this session, and there's a lot of work that a lot of us need to do, and I wonder if there's any discussion of the chairs just to restrict our hearings to Senate bills only for the rest of this session.
At this point in time, there has been no discussion along those lines, but we do have some House bills that we're going to continue to hear from. We have most of the Senate bills that have already here. We have heard two or three of them. I don't believe that we've got any Senate bills in our committee.
I bring it up, Mr. Chairman, for the point that I don't think any piece of legislation of any real degree leaving this committee now is going to make it. It might make it across the floor of the House. It doesn't have any place else to go, but it's going to be very choice. It's going to get at least left in the Senate, so that if there's any work to be done on the legislation or whatever, it's probably best to leave it in this committee and work on it through the interim for next year rather than sending it down the road when it is going to make it to the end.
We're going to my personal be doing comment. Quite a bit of work on land disposals. I don't quite understand where, you know, oftentimes, Representative Sun, where you're coming from. If I come in here and ask that all of this land is being disposed of, if I ask for that to be put into part of a park because of the aesthetic value of the, you know, and the beautiful mountains and the, you know, the grizzly bear and the, all this kind of stuff, and it's just beautiful, you know. If I ask for that, I would probably get support, you know, or if I want to include it into the Tananaw Valley Forest Plan, which we're trying to get the forest industry off the ground, and we include that land in there, it would probably get support, you know, as a result of it. But yet we try to, and all we're asking for is input, more input than what we have, which I feel that these communities have. And even though DNR says that they hold these hearings and everything else, I claim that they do, in fact, not hold these hearings in these communities, that they don't have anything to say about it, that they come out and tell them where the land is going to be disposed of, what kind of a land disposal is going to be, where it's going to take place, where you have to be or where you don't have to be. And the people just sit there and complain about it. I'm saying that we've got to have more input on land disposals. I'm saying we're not even trying to stop land disposals. We're just trying to have more input on land disposals. If we were trying to stop land disposals, we would simply come in and say, this land is just too pristine and too beautiful and the lakes are too pure, to have land disposals. And we got to maintain that for future generations. Because we only have an 11 million acre park, Mount St. Elias and the Denali Park and everything else. We don't have enough parks in our area. We need more.
The short response is consistency is the hobgoblin of poor minds. And I continue to reserve the right to change my mind as I learn more and more about the situation. But if there is a lack of consistency, sometimes it's intended and sometimes it's just the fact that I haven't realized I'm inconsistent. So.
Representative Cato.
Mr. Chairman, in view of Mr. Sun's recommendation that we not deal with House bills and things like that, I think it's been in his purview that there is a second session, and a person can get a bill along the first session as far as they can get it. Then at least it doesn't have to go through all that in the second session. I think we're fully aware of the fact that we are in the first session, and that to move bills through so that they're ready for the second session is an excellent idea.
I got to correct it. It's a foolish consistency. I was correct. It's a quote from Emerson, and I misquoted him. So.
I'm glad you said I didn't say I was foolish.
No.
Ned, you got
to. Mr. Chairman, I would just point out for the department's behalf that we've just seen this CES on Friday, and we think that probably there's a lot of things in it that need a lot of work. And whether we do it here or in another committee, we'd like to be sure that there is a full work session on it, because the definitions aren't clear, and we have a question about dedicated funds and a lot of other things. So I would just say that if you are going to hold it in committee, we would look forward to getting a chance to work in with it.
We'll hold it in committee. Representative Thompson.
I was just going to second Representative Cato's sentiments, Mr. Chairman. I don't look at the issue of how many days are left in a session as an excuse not to do work, but rather as a reason to do all the more. And to me, if we've only got 21 days left, that's a reason why we ought to be working double time rather than thinking of reasons not to do any more work.
You just saying that there's a lot of issues that you've got to focus on to get out of here in 21 days. And
are you,
we've all got tons of work to do for us.
Are you saying then that you wouldn't mind having a an all-day Saturday session, two or three of them on House Bill 42? About 8 in the morning, about 6 in the afternoon. I'm just kidding.
I was here all day Saturday, Mr. Chairman.
Pardon? Tuesday and Thursday, right. We will, since we only have one Senate bill in our committee, we will continue to hear House bills up through the end of the session, and I think it'll make our workload a lot easier coming back into the session next year. And we do have some priority pieces of legislation, one from our own, one of our own committee members that just sent me a note saying he had a bill that he wanted to hear. But we will definitely, those Senate bills that are priorities, we will be bringing before the committee.
Now that the reporters left the room, I'll just add that if we sat around here holding our breath waiting for Senate bills, we'd all die shortly.
It's on the record. Please. Resource adjourned.
Zara, we'll talk to you about it.